This is special edition Home Tech Podcast. We're going to talk about Windows Server 2012 Essentials Beta. We had done a podcast last week with Christian Johnson and John Zadler. And actually, we're hoping to get John on the show here a little bit later, where we took a first look at Windows Server 2012 Essentials, which is just, the name is just way too long. It's easier to abbreviate just WS2012E. I think that's becoming some standard notation. But I wanted to get a deeper dive with some of the guys this weekend, and so it's Sunday evening, and I've gathered a cast to talk about it. And we want to kind of go through some things. The goal today is to talk about three different things. We want to talk first about domains. There's been a lot of discussion around the domain, and some folks say it's a deal breaker when it comes to a Windows home server. And so if Microsoft is touting this as the next home server, or at least what you could use, if the enthusiast could use for home server, what does that mean from a domain perspective? Second, we want to talk and work through storage spaces a bit. And what does that mean? I know Paul has done some testing in that, I think, and at least with backup. And so we'll talk a little bit about storage spaces, and I've got a demo set up to walk folks through that. And then last, hopefully we'll get a chance to go through and do some media and talk about what does it mean. I know they jam these media components into the server, and so we'll get a chance to do that and maybe talk through it if time allows. And John, hopefully John will join us as we go. Let me just quick introduce the guys. If you've been watching the podcasts at all, you know most of them, but a newcomer to the podcast tonight and a guy who's all over Windows Home Server version 1, and he's known as Drashna in the Home Server Show forums, and that is Chris. Chris, how are you doing this evening?
Good.
Thanks for coming in. John Zadler said we had to have you on the show tonight, and so I agreed, and so I'm glad you could come out. So I appreciate you coming out.
Glad to be here.
Also joining us is Greg Welch. He's our Windows Phone resident expert and also Windows Home Server. You got a Norco, right? Isn't that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I got a beast in there, yeah.
Yeah, so appreciate you coming in from Vegas. Is it super hot there, too?
I think it was 111 today, so
oh my god. Kinda, yeah. That's stupid.
Yeah, but yeah. It was raining on top of it, so it's pretty muggy today.
Is it steam when it rains like that?
Yeah, almost. Yeah,
it just comes down in steam. I can't imagine. Also from BYOB, and they have the night off tonight, and so you could join us, Mike Martis. Mike, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Jim?
I'm doing well, and appreciate you doing that. Is it Chris was telling me that it's super hot down there in San Diego. I assume you've got equally hot weather there in L.A.
Yeah, it's pretty hot on the Inland Empire as well. So,
yeah, it's I'm ready. I'm ready for some cool weather. I'm just saying. I'm complaining. I'm whining. I'm sick of the summer. Bring on the snow. So, and a guy who lives in a state that gets snow fairly regularly, Paul Brennan. Paul, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine, thank you. I was just playing my lower third here while getting started.
That's right. You've been putting a lot of work in on Windows Server 2012 the last week. You've been trying to keep up with us and just posting tons of stuff out there to your site.
Yeah, the last couple of nights particularly, mostly about the speed of backups and restore, the core functions I cared most about.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that when we talk about storage spaces. So let's bring that in when we get to talk again. All right, let's get right to it. And Chris, I want to bring you in on the discussion. You've been you're a pretty big advocate of V1. You never, you told me pre-show, you really never made the jump to 2011. You have a domain, or you're using V1 and with as a domain controller. Is that right in your environment?
Yeah, I'm using my V1 server as a domain controller.
And so what, for you, what kind of drove you to that? You know, most of the home server users wanted to kind of get away from that or didn't want it to be that. What was your drive to make it or put it on the domain?
Honestly, mainly the LDAP authentication for things like Subsonic and some of the PHP programs. The other is the Windows Deployment Services, which is a PXE or Pixie booting service. And I use it to either install Windows on computers attached to the network or use it to actually boot the restore disk without having to have an actual disk.
Sure, sure. Okay. So some functionality that exists on your network, be able to push things out to the PCs, install Windows on the PCs, authorization and authentication. So you're a big Subsonic user as well?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. And streaming that out, I assume you're using your phone to listen to your music collection and such, and is that how you kind of consume Subsonic?
Yeah, and podcasts through Subsonic.
Yeah, and actually, the guys almost have me talked into that. What stopped you from going to 2011?
Mainly drive extender.
Okay. And so how much storage space do you have on your version 1 box?
I'm not exactly sure, but Subsonic reports about 5 terabytes.
Okay. And so I assume that's spread across a handful of drives?
Five 2 terabyte drives.
Okay, 5. And no, did you mess around with any of the drive extender betas that were out, the replacement drive extender pieces?
No, I didn't really.
Okay. So from a 2012 standpoint, I asked you pre-show as well, so, you know, when are you going to install it? And you pretty much said, as soon as it's available to me. What makes that change for you? I assume you're happy that it's going to be, you know, you're not going to have to mess around very much to get the domain working on 2012. Why so quickly?
Because, yeah, I like having the domain, but storage spaces.
Okay. And do you think... Oh, there's John. Hey, John, welcome.
Howdy.
Chris, do you think... So is storage spaces ready for prime time?
From what I've seen from you guys, yeah.
Well, we'll see tonight. I don't know if it's... I don't know if anybody's done any real testing with it yet. Maybe Paul has sent it around the horn a couple times, but... So the idea of a domain for you is not intimidating because you're already in that environment, right? You're already doing that. But what about us?
Yeah.
What about us typical home server users who were happy, you know, domainless? And I know John Zadler always is messing around with the domain, probably because of your influence. But
yeah, that's right. It's his fault. Definitely his fault. 100% his fault.
So what would you tell me as far as what are the benefits? You know, certainly if I'm going to use this as a home server going forward, I have to – the domain is on install, and it's there. Why would I want to use it? I mean, what kind of benefits would it have for me?
Well, the first thing I would say is you don't really have to use it. If you don't configure your computers to use it, I know Small Business Server 2011 Essentials, believe the connector actually either automatically joined you to the domain or gave you the choice to not. And I suspect that 2012 Essentials will be the same way, where you don't have to join it.
Yeah, there's that little tick box when you do the install. But that's it, Jim. I think the reason last time when you did it, you installed because it was like a home version, or what did you install a Windows 7 there?
No, we installed Windows 7 Home Premium, and of course that doesn't have any of the right guts inside of it to work on a domain. So it installed like the regular connector would, and then we did a Windows 8 install. And John, I don't remember the little tick box, so I'm going to trust you on that. Was there... You're saying upon install, I can exclude that box from the domain?
Yeah, well, that's it. It'll reboot, and then that's it. And that's what was surprising. When you did your install, it didn't ask for a reboot.
On but Windows 7, it didn't.
Which is Windows 7 Ultimate. Then that's a decision. You do a reboot, and then when it comes back up, it continues, and then it has a little tick box that says, do you want to add your stuff to the server? So I guess at that point, you know, when it asks you, do you want to add your stuff to the server, I'm kind of guessing that that's basically telling you, do you want to be part of the domain?
Okay.
But like Chris was saying to me the other offline the other time is, and I recall I did this at work because, you know, like my PC at work was connected to the domain. And then sometimes if I want to do some finagling or whatever, some surfing or whatever, what I would do is just log off the server. So let's say it was called Zadler/John. I would just log off, and I would log on with the PC rights. So when you log in just as the PC, you're local. So, you know, you can choose always from then on always just to run your computers like that. So even technically, if it is part of the domain, you can still run it as a local user and still have access to your files. You just give yourself permissions, right? Because you're going to install the connector and stuff. So the connector will give you permissions to shares that way.
To clarify what John was saying, when you log into a domain user, it's the domain name slash the username. However, if the computer is joined to the domain, you can use the computer name slash the username, and that will log into the local user account on that computer still. And with Windows 7, I know it would cache the last login that you used, so you can keep on using that one without having to type the full thing in again.
Okay, so what I'm showing you guys right now is the Windows 8 box that I actually set up, and I've attached it once already. And I uninstalled the connector right before the show because I actually wanted to, I thought maybe we'd take a second to do a live install of what the connector looks like. But when I was setting up the box, I set it up as the average guy for the domain. I just, you know, that's just the name I picked, the average guy. And then the username is Jim. So I thought I had selected it to not be a part of it, but I imagine I can log in here at this point. And so I don't currently have the connector on the box right now, but it looks like maybe it cached that domain user locally on the box. So maybe this is a bad example because I really wanted to do a fresh look at what that install looks like to prove that. But maybe I can go ahead and start that install real quick, and maybe it'll walk it through me again here. So let me throw this out, Mike or Greg or Paul, from a domain perspective. What are your guys's? What's your concern, or where do you come at? Let's start with you, Mike. Where do you come in at, on the domain? Is this are you worried about it? Not? You going to use it? How do you see it?
Personally, I'm not worried about it. I'm a system admin, so I'm used to working in Active Directory. This is actually, as far as a domain goes, this is actually really cake compared to the Active Directory policies that you would find in 2003 or Server 2008 R2 or even 2012. So for me, I don't have any kind of educational hurdle that I need to kind of overcome. It's real simple. I mean, to me, it works exactly the same as 2011 Essentials. Really easy, simple folder controls. It kind of does everything for you. You know, you just click a checkbox and say, hey, I want everything, you know, I want all of these local files to now be on the server as, the folder redirection. It's real simple. I like it. I'm going to use it. I use a domain at the house already. So, there's no real hurdles for me to overcome. I think it's great simply just because of the folder redirection, the added security, and just the more robust features that you get with a domain.
Yeah, I think Paul Thurrott has been talking the past few weeks. He's been saying the same thing over and over. It's like with Windows 8 or, let's say, Small Business, the Colorado versions, and when the Windows 8 Server and this and that, a lot of these guys that are studying, Small Business, they're like, what do you call those guys? It's like it's their job to sell you the product, to come to you with Small Business Server and then install it for you. These guys are basically, Microsoft is putting them out of a job. Because it's becoming so simple now that that's it. You want to add the computer, you install the OS. It's like you see how quick it is. Any regular person can install the server, and then that's it. You add a computer, and then you didn't even know that you joined the. I'm part of a domain. Oh my god, I'm part of the club.
It's super simple the way it works. It's just a couple check boxes. You pick a name. If you're a small business, you just throw in your company name. You don't even have to put .local or anything on there. It handles that all for you. And then you just start checking boxes down. And then when you add users, it's same simple process that Windows Home Server used. So, I mean, if you have Windows Home Server level abilities, you can use this new Essentials with no problem.
Okay, let me kind of jump in on the tail end of that there.
Go ahead.
When, used to 2011, kind of got a run in there. And a few years back, like I had the domain studying I was telling. And so I go through the setup of this, and it gets to the point where I want to set up remote access, the remote anywhere. And so it says, do you own a domain? And so I had one I wanted to use for it. So I go throw it in there. And for the average guy that wants to set this up, the next step, the next question was, you need to connect to your domain name provider and basically sign up for an SSL cert. And so I go over there, and I happen to be able to get one for $12, so I pay for it. But it wants, you know, you got to do the CRT cert, and the average person is not going to be able to do that. And then
that part's a little bit messy. Yeah, it starts to go, oh, what's going on? Yeah, when you have to when you want to, because you want to put that extra level of protection. You know, so
I couldn't move forward with my own domain without that SSL being in place. I couldn't jump that, and so I was kind of bummed about that. So I went back and did the Windows version. I can't remember what it was called, but they have a new one instead of homeserver.net or whatever it was. Remote web access, yeah. So I go back through that. At the moment, I still don't know why I can't get to the live page, even though I forwarded a router and stuff. I mean, it'll come here, and I'm sure I just missed something small, but in the last hour.
I think Paul has something to add to that. Paul?
Yeah. What can you tell, Jeff? I hate the domain model. Disagree more. I'm sorry. Just NetPLWiz and being able to auto-log in a laptop, there's no way my friends and family want to deal with that and enforcing a password when they sit down to use it. So if I can get back to work group model, I'm extremely happy because the backups and restores are going great. But the whole domain nonsense and registering certs, sorry, just not a pleasant way to spend weekends to fiddle with that.
Now, but hold on. Let me make sure I understand this completely. So I install 2012 in my environment. I set up the domain, and then I'm going to go to my first PC, which just happens to be a Windows 7 Home Premium box, right? And I install the connector, and it works just fine. It doesn't have any domain issues. The user doesn't know any different. They log in. The next time they log in, they don't see anything different except they have the dashboard and the stuff that we inherit from 2011. But you install your or maybe your wife Paul has a laptop that's Pro, right? That's Windows 7 Ultimate or Windows 7, right?
Yep, Ultimate in our case. Yep.
So John and Chris, what I understand at this point is that I have the option when I'm installing the connector, it'll put it on the domain. Or it'll give me the option to put it on the domain. I can say no, I don't want to deal with that. Take it back off, and from that point on, when the user logs in, they'll be logging in on their local account. They won't be attached to the domain, so to speak, and everything will be fine at that point. Is that the right, correct understanding, John Zadler?
Yeah.
As far as I'm aware, yep.
Okay.
Anyone get that working? I mean, I didn't see that happen. On Ultimate, you don't even get it given the choice. I think on Home, you have to be Jim because it won't join the domain.
Right. Home, Ultimate, you're fine. Anything yeah. below, but anything that would be Pro, Enterprise, or Ultimate on 7, and any Windows 8, I think, the Windows 8 consumer preview that we all have is Pro. So it's going to immediately try and put it on. I did this last weekend, and I'm having trouble remembering, but John says no problem that you can drop that off, and then so it'll reboot it, and then it'll come up with a login screen that says your user at the domain ID. And John, at that point, if you change that to the local account,
it's gonna be the little box, the little tick box is gonna ask you, do you want to move your stuff to the server? Then you say yes.
Okay.
It'll finish it up. And then your screen will kind of go down. It'll come back up. And now instead of, like, let's say now your computer, let's say you log in, it's written just Jim. You know, Jim and then your password because you're local. So what happens, all of a sudden then you're going to see it's going to shut down. It's going to, like, log off, log back on. Then it's going to be written the average guy / Jim. And it's, okay, that's it. Now I'm part of the domain. But then you can, you know, click and say, sign off. And then sign on local and go back to, but I think for local, you have to put the PC, whatever your PC name was, whatever you called your PC. So you give it that PC name / Jim. And then you'll, because this is the thing, right? When you have it your standard way now, you know, you have all your desktop icons and your background and all that stuff. But then when you go add to the domain and it shuts down, it comes back on, it's like it's a new user. It's going to be written the average guy / Jim. But then you're going to go to your desktop and you can say, where's my icons? Where's my backdrop there and all that stuff? Like, it's all gone. because it's like as if it created a new user. You can go and copy all that stuff from the one user folder to the other user folder and then kind of continue by there. But it's basically, that's it. It's like now it's created another user, but that person's content, because you've ticked that little box, that person's, all that person's files and stuff like that is on the server. But then you also have an option that if you actually added a laptop to the server, then I think in Small Business Server Essentials, and I think also in this version of 2012 there, when you add to the domain, it's going to turn on sync. You know that green icon there, syncing? So what happens is, even though it's going to copy your files to the server, it's also going to keep your files synced like on the PC. So it's like, what do you call it, off-site availability. So that's it. There's now, you know, because if you're part of the network and all your files are on your server, then you take your laptop and you left the house and you want to log into your email, like you're out of luck now, unless you went through the web interface. Like you're not connected there. You're not tethered anymore. So by having this, that's it. It'll start that sync software, that installation. So I go back in there and I actually have to turn that stuff off because I want to keep a small footprint on my PC. I don't want to have all my, because I have pictures and videos, like let's say, I don't know, 500 or 600 gigabytes. You know, I don't want to have that all sitting on my drive. Like, I don't have enough room on that drive. I only have 120 gig drive, so I make sure I turn that syncing off so that it doesn't bring all that server stuff there.
So John, in this case, I've got, here's the domain account on the left.
Yeah.
And then here's the other user account, right? And you're saying I should be able to come over here, put PC name, and I guess it's called...
Yeah, what happens if you click the little arrow on the left there?
Here? No.
No,
like this, that goes back to the...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So take the other user and now type in... just type in whatever your... The PC name slash Jim.
It's a forward slash or backward slash?
Forward slash.
Forward slash. Well, so that you are currently no... there are currently no logon servers available to service the logon request, is what it's telling me. Because here it's forcing me, how do I sign into another domain? Oh, and it was a backward slash, so let's just, to be fair, we'll take that there. And actually, I think it's this. Okay, so that looks like that's going to log in then to my local account on the box. Now, you can't tell if one over the other. Right, because I didn't do any customizations on it, but that did. Right now, I'm logged in locally. If I log out, and go back to this is the local account.
Now you see, that's it. See how it defaulted now to the what it was before there.
To that local account. So, Paul, let me ask you there. That's just kind of a quick run through of what that looks like. Does that become an issue for you, knowing that if you just change it back once and it does log in to the local account from there on out, or at least displays the local account password? Is that better?
Yeah, no, it's part of it. I was more talking from a sysadmin perspective. On the server, I'm not really interested in the certificate issue and all the stuff you go through for setting up VPNs. It's a whole lot easier in Workgroup. And Greg and I and others were talking earlier on Google+.
Oh, okay.
But on the client side, could you continue what you're showing? This is great. So, Jim... Can you go back to your local login? Is that the local login we're looking at right now?
Let me log out here.
Because I've got a few windows going here. I'm uploading to YouTube of my video I just finished. So I was trying to look at my own screenshots I recorded about an hour ago.
Okay, so here's the options.
There, so go to your local login. You and John were talking about that. Which one was it?
That's the Windows 8 / dad.
Yeah, go ahead and log in.
Okay.
All right, once you're in, if you can hit the... is it Windows C to start the search? Charms, bring up Charms, just Windows C.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just type the word net, just start typing.
Okay.
Start typing. Yep, net, plwiz.exe.
I clicked the share button already. So
That's the automatic.
Yeah, just hit Windows C again and just
start typing. Net, plwiz.
PLZ.
Yeah, you got it.
Got it, okay.
Yep. Yeah.
You got to hit enter, yep.
Okay.
Net, plwiz, and when that comes up, you click on property. So, John, let's see, Greg, you were talking to me about this. So, NetPLWiz normally lets you just clear a checkbox and let the machine auto log on. Mm-hmm. So, if you have, you know, your mom or someone who just reboots a machine, they don't want to mess with a password, it never leaves the house on a desktop. That's the part that goes away when you join a domain. And I find that, you know, it sounds like a nit, and maybe we'll get past it, but frankly, I still stand by what I was originally saying. I still will miss the simplicity of the workgroup model. All I'm really using home server for is backup and recovery, and I don't really need the domain complexity, which I've played with at work, and I've used 2003 and 2008 and R2.
Is everybody
on? I still
see
the value for what I'm doing here.
Paul, is everybody on a pro or higher version of Windows 7 at your house?
Let me think about that. Yeah, for the most part, yeah. So that's another issue, yep. Okay. And as we go to Windows 8, that'll continue to be an issue.
Yeah, because I think we're all going to, I mean, with Windows Pro being, let's just for a second say we're following the retail model, Windows 8 Pro is going to be $40. Out of the chute. So, you know, everybody will go to Windows 8 Pro for the most part. Why wouldn't you, right?
Yep. Yeah. I've got minor delays in my case because of real estate. They, you know, have access, so I do have to wait till it gets, E10 gets approved, but, yeah, that's a minor one.
Jim, I wanted you to see the thing is, the other issue becomes like when you're using Windows 8, right, is because with all those tiles and stuff like that, you know, you want all that content to like come in, you know, just like on your phone, right? I'll say, hey, look at my pictures and all my stuff is there. But when you log in on the domain, lock your screen there on your PC there, and then go to where it says users, like the charms, and I forget what it is. Let me see. Show me your screen. I don't see your screen.
I'm just on the desktop.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Okay, so lock that desktop so it doesn't jump to somebody else. And then click on the, go on the bottom left where the charms are, I guess it is.
Oh, you want me to lock it? Is that what you're saying?
No. Oh. I just so that the camera doesn't jump to somebody else.
Oh, yeah. No, that's at your level, John. Click on my screen so you only see that. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there you
okay,
go.
Okay, so now go to the charms, and I want you to go use the user account, I guess. How do you get to the user stuff?
Probably Windows C for charms, and then just type in users. Hang on, let me see if that's true. I just did this earlier this morning. Was it users or... okay, you're going to have to hit down arrow for settings, I think. This is where it's annoying for the global search missing.
Right.
Move over to settings. Now start typing. There you go. Users. Nice.
Okay, yeah, see right there. See now, see how it's written, sign-in options.
And manage domain users.
If you have the desktop, like that's it. Because it's not using your Microsoft account, then your emails and all that stuff won't be coming in. So over here, what you could do is you could say switch to my Microsoft account, or I think you can kind of combine the two. So
if I switch to that now, John, do you want me to try that?
Yeah, give that a shot.
I'm not. Oh, I guess I shouldn't probably show this.
Yeah, take it off for a second.
Yeah, hold on. Let me take that off. Okay.
Yep. Well, while he's muted his video, if you guys can take a peek at my screen share while he's doing that, and you'll see I'm trying to show what NetPLWiz was supposed to look like for Jim earlier, and you can see there's a checkbox. User must enter a username and password. That goes away when you join a domain. That's all I was trying to show earlier, guys. And I find that I'm not saying we won't get past that. I'm just saying I'd rather not have to deal with a hassle in the first place when I don't really need the perks of the domain.
Yeah, I remember seeing something like that where even locally, well, I think on my version 1, right, the thing is, you know, I didn't want to, you have to create, in version 1, you have to have your username and a password, right? A lot of people, they just want to turn on their computer and be right at their desktop. So I think that's an option there is that in Windows 7 I used it, where you can go to that screen where you said it, and you could actually say, you know, don't ask for the password, or kind of like save the password and don't ask me for it, especially if you're only one user on that PC.
Yeah, that's so what I was just showing. Yep.
That account is there, the username and password is there, but next time you log in or you reboot your computer, you'll go right into the menu there.
Yeah, and when you go to install a home server connector, you know, version 1, Windows Home Server 2011, or the new one, it complains if you have auto login turned on. So you temporarily turn it off, you install the connector, and you turn it right back on, and everything was happy. With this version, though, on the domain, you cannot turn it back on. That was the minor nitpicking I was doing there. It sounds minor, but it's annoying to the user who suddenly you have to train to type in a password that they weren't used to having to do before. That's all.
So... Yeah, Paul, I mean, I guess I understand what you're saying. I'm going to restart this and see what it does here. And we can just watch the whole thing restart. But so, Paul, I hear what you're saying, that it's kind of a pain to – there's an extra step. It's not as nice as it used to be. But if you could overcome that login one time and have your have your family users still just be able to log in like they did before. Is that as big of an issue for you?
Well, Martis, isn't that the case? You can override that?
Say that one more time. Override what?
That you can override the password reset requirement in Active Directory?
Normally you can. I don't know about this version of server. While you guys were doing that, I was installing routing a remote access on it. So
or Chris,
it's a race
between you and Chris to get in there and see if it's there.
And then
it's like a checkbox, right?
And then at the same time on my Windows 8 machine, I was trying to pull up multiple users as well, which I ended up kind of doing.
So four monitors isn't enough.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Mine just rebooted and came up, and it's logging in with my live ID at this point. So,
hit the left arrow, or the arrow on the left side there, and log in back. Click other user and log back into the domain.
Oh. Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point, though. For friends and family, you want to see, you know, who have a Hotmail account already and want to see their local weather and all that local stuff, then yeah, there is a training learning curve for them to be typing in their Hotmail password that they're used to.
Yeah, because when you do the live guy, when you log in the live guy, then all the other accounts, it goes and gets your stuff. But when you do it like manually, then you have to go into the People's app and log in. Then you have to go in the email app and log in, in the calendar app and log in. You have to
good points.
Around.
So there's a learning curve anyway, yep, whether you're domain-based or not. So maybe I can hide it under the covers. Again, still though, as a sysadmin on the server, I don't really care to be playing with profiles and all that stuff. I know they made it pretty easy, and I've seen the install, but it's quite a bit longer too to install the connector because of all that domain stuff. Imagine if, you know, a month from now we all hear there's a way to just go to workgroup model on the new Windows Server 2012 Essentials. I think a fair number of us would go to that model before even connecting any client.
Yeah, for the average guy, for sure.
Exactly.
I'd like to agree with you.
What if they made it just simple to have the domain running, but like John's saying, kind of a click box on the, you know, what I didn't show you here was the client install, and I'm actually able to log in the domain. You know, I installed the client one time, I actually removed the client software off of it, and it still has everything I need to get logged into the domain. I have the server running in the background at this point, so all virtual on this box. But Paul, imagine if they made that just one check easier to say, do you add it to the domain or don't? And if you say no, then it goes all with the local account. And is the lost functionality at that point only in folder sharing? And I mean, really, right? The backups are going to still continue to work. It's just folder sharing that you don't workgroup versus domain. Or am I wrong there? Maybe I'm confusing things. But if you're not on the domain, do you not get folder sharing?
Well, I don't know about the folder sharing, but you would lose WSUS unless you set that up, and I don't think, well, I guess in version 1 we added it, right, Bastion?
Yeah.
For Chris.
Yeah, but that's it. See, that's the thing, is because you installed the connector, then you want to go see shared folders on the server, you could do that, but that's it. If you never installed the connector, like now, if you just had your PC, and you say, I'm going to talk to the server. I want to see the shared folders. He's going to say, I'm not letting you in. I'm a server. Like, I got, you know, the brick, the wall is up there. You're not coming in until you install the connector, which is another thing I had mentioned, I think, on the last podcast. Like, for instance, they said, let's say if you have Windows Server 2012 Essentials, this build, right? And then you have an Exchange server, and you want to add that server, the Exchange server, to this server. All you have to do is install a connector on that computer, and bang, it's part of the domain. It's a lot easier than it was before in the past. So that's it. So just to reiterate that installing the connector gives you a lot of that the cohesion there, where everything starts to work together nicely.
All right. Just to kind of confirm things, I brought up my version of Windows Server, and if you go into the Server Manager under Tools, ADUC, and then from there, you can go in, properties on the user. And then from there, you can put, you know, must change password. You have the same exact password settings that you normally have.
But can you disable, can you get NetPLWiz to work again where it can auto log on? Sure, I guess with some sort of group policy you push out, right?
Well, I'd,
I don't know.
Again, you always have to authenticate to a domain, so I don't know that there's a way that you can shut it off or have it auto-log on.
I know in XP, and I believe Windows 7, there was a registry setting to be able to do that, which is what that one setting also configures. You'd have to try it out, though.
If you guys look at my desktop, you'll see it. So I've got Windows 7 in the bottom right. If you guys click on me on the way on the right there,
for the broadcast.
And you'll see, there it is. So Windows 7 in the bottom right, that's how it looks. And you have a big fat checkbox, users must enter username. You can just turn that off. It prompts you for your password and now saves them. Up here, you're seeing Windows 8. And it's been joined. It's got the connector right there. You can see it running in the tray. And you'll see it's got the two users, the domain login and the local login. But again, the checkbox to do that policy thing where you can just allow the machine to boot without prompting you for passwords gone. Again, I confess it might be a moot point because maybe you're training friends and family anyway to get used to their Hotmail, you know, their old Hotmail account they might have from 10 years ago to start logging into Microsoft when they're rebooting the machine anyway. So not that big a deal. It's just more under the covers. There's definitely more complexity to setting this up that I wasn't, just rather not care for it. For me, it was mostly about the certs and the VPN. I was talking to Greg earlier today about the VPN setup, and it's very business-like. It's nothing like the workgroup model where I set up VPNs before from Amachi or even from the Windows 2008 native VPN function. It's so much easier in workgroup model than in a domain with real certs. So just saying, that's all.
Sure.
Yeah. But the good news is the speed. I care about that a whole lot more.
Did you log in you're on the domain, right?
I am on the, let's see, how did I, yeah, if I just logged in that way, yes.
So go back, can you please go back to that screen there where we were before and see how, if it kind of like associated your Microsoft
password? No. The last time I logged in, John, I logged in with my Windows Live ID, right? That was the login screen that I got the last time I logged in.
Okay, so log out. Click their settings.
Is that you, John?
Not me. It's not us. Somebody's got a kid running out. One of us has a kid running around.
That was mine.
Oh, okay. Just mute for me. Okay, so John, there's the three options, right?
This is the middle guy.
Okay. I like how it brought in my picture there. Live ID.
That's your local stuff. See, that's because you signed in with your Microsoft password, and now it brought in your content. And this is what you kind of lose when you go into the domain.
Okay.
So that's it. But now click on your domain and then put in your password, and then go to that area back where it kind of was putting your user stuff. So go back to arms and.
Oh.
Yeah, I think settings. Click on settings.
What am I looking for? User.
Yeah, because you want to do your user preferences there, your user, see your customizations.
Okay. What next?
Connect your Microsoft account.
I did that already. Connect your domain account to your Microsoft. Oh, so connect your domain account to your Microsoft account to sync PC settings.
There you go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see, so now I think what happens is it's going to start to bring in that stuff, whereas before it didn't. Because now you're kind of you're making them work like hand in hand.
All right, so I'll hit next.
And then that's it, and then you just go through all that stuff.
See, and then I got to do it again.
It's asking for your email address. Now it's going to associate your domain account with your Windows password account. See, there you go. Now it's asking that. So now that's it.
Okay, now that y'all know my phone number.
Oh, no.
All right, it's all right. All right, so now it's connected.
Yeah, see, so now when you go to the desktop or whatever, like your desktop, the tiles should start, your content should start coming in there, your lifestyle stuff. You have that option that says keep me sort of like, there's an option there in Windows 8 that kind of like, it says if you have a scroll down there. I'm not sure if it says share. Yeah, click on share.
Click on share.
Yeah, go back and there was a share tab.
In where?
The screen before.
I'll have to get back to user.
I'm not sure if it's there on this. Yeah, check on the share on the left.
Okay.
That one. No, okay. The general, you're going to have to go through. Because there's some time tab there that says if I'm like on a metered, how is it called? If I'm on a metered account, like don't be syncing my stuff all the time. Check to see if there's something like, oh yeah, see download over metered connection. Yeah, you're just down there.
Oh.
Yeah, see that last one?
On the right, down here.
Download over metered account. See, there's some kind of syncing there that you might not want something to see. Prevent extra charges, keep devices. That's a little bit of a setting that kind of you might it kind of like keeps it from bringing your content all the time, you know, in. But anyway, basically now you're at the point where you've got both. You're using a domain account, but it's also associated with your Windows password account. And so now if you go to the Metro interface there,
how would it know if you're metered? Wow.
Huh?
Well, it doesn't know. You say on or off. Am I on metered or am I not on metered?
Yeah, you got to flip that bit manual. Yeah, because if you're on a MiFi or something, there's no way it would know.
So here it is. I'm logged in to the domain, and yet it's pulling my right. It's pulling my picture from my live ID.
Proof in the pudding.
There you go.
And if I go to the SkyDrive, this is the real one. Doom, 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 doom. Do I have access to my SkyDrive documents, and sure enough, there they are. So, I don't know, guys. I mean, that's a pretty good...
That was pleasing.
So that's it. Now you've gained some stuff that you lost from Windows 8 that you had just before. See, before you had it, now when you joined the domain, you lost this part, but now by doing what I just explained there, now you've got that back.
Well, there's also one other option. You should be able to change the work group for the computer after it's been joined to the domain, and that should allow you to actually change it back to a work group computer and still allow you to back up the computer.
Thank you, Chris. I'm trying that now.
Where would I do that, Chris?
System properties. I'm not sure on Windows 8.
Oh, okay.
It'd be in the control panel. Normally under 7, it's under system.
Go to your desktop, Jim.
Okay, hold on.
Or the system icon right up there should be.
Okay.
Lower right, and then right-click for the power tools.
Holy crap. Right-click for the power tools.
Yeah. Lower left. Sorry, lower left. Lower left.
My fault. Yeah, lower left, and then...
Yeah, there you could right-click, and then it'll say control panel.
Holy cow, I never knew that was in there.
You got all kinds of ways to get in there. You got all kinds of ways to screw things up.
Nice. Okay.
Click on system.
All right. System there.
Okay. There you go. And then you can see change settings right there on the right. Third pane down.
That one?
Yep.
Change settings?
Mm-hmm. And then click change. And then there you go. Yep. Click work group. There you go. Yeah.
And that's normally. And if you want to join back to the domain, you do the same thing, but in reverse. Click on the domain and then type in the...
So why would you use this again?
To convert it back to a work group computer if you don't want all the hassle of it being joined to the domain.
So you don't have to use the domain login or anything like that. It actually is just like a local computer that's sitting on a work group.
Yep. Though, if you do change it to the work group, I'll recommend that set it to the net BIOS name for the domain, you know, the part that without the .local, and that should help with being able to see other computers that are connected to the domain.
Right, I just did mine. I'm rebooting it now.
I tell you, he always comes out with these gems, this guy. And then it's like, what? Did you check this? Like, what? Oh, can you?
So Chris, I'm rebooting mine, and I'll try backup. We'll see how it goes.
Paul, we'll watch for you as yours comes. I'm watching yours here. It'll come back up in just a second. I'll flip over to you. So while Paul's coming back up, why at this point I should be able to see the Windows Home Server, or I'm sorry, the Windows Server 2012 in my network, and it's not there. I don't see I should see the server in here.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be a reason why at this point I can't see the server?
Windows networking is kind of wonky sometimes like that.
Okay.
That's about the best explanation. I've had on my version 1 server running domain, it connected to my domain running both DNS with it manually added for just the short name and using the Windows Internet Name Service, which is a NetBIOS server, also connecting to both of those on the server, and it still would not show up in the network. So...
Yeah, so Jim, Paul, what I would do is just where it's written network on the top, just click there and just type /, and then the server name.
I'm going to switch over to Paul while I'm getting the server name because I forget what I named it. So, Paul, you've got control.
Okay. Yeah, if you guys take a look here, you'll see that went well. So I rejoined Workgroup, and I rebooted, just as Chris had mentioned. And now when I reboot and log in, it's a local login, and I type in netplwiz, and now I can turn off. Users must enter username and password. I hit apply, and now it prompts me for my password. Whoops. Hit OK. And now when I reboot the machine, I should auto-log in. This is great for lab boxes or virtual machines because I have a lot of them. So with a VM that you're just kicking around, it's really nice to reboot. And now I'm trying to back up, and you'll get a preview of what I was going to talk about, but I think you'll be impressed. I'm starting my first backup in workgroup mode. And obviously, it shouldn't really make a difference. It's, it can still see the connector. I didn't get Yep.
If it should work for a home premium, it should definitely work for later or for other editions too.
There you go. Backup in progress.
Yep.
There you go.
Watch a little longer, and there comes the fun part. This bubble, it's a little annoying how it pops up at every 1%, but it starts to fly. Yeah, look at the speed. Are you guys annoying. Seeing that? Take a look at the speed you're getting. Nice.
Paul, why don't you, while you're there, why don't you talk a little bit about your experience with the backup at this point? I know initially you thought it was slower, but your testing has proven otherwise.
Yeah, I think we're done talking about domains. I didn't want to step on your topic there, but is that okay to move on to
I think,
speed?
Guys,
yeah.
are we okay? We covered a lot in the last 50 minutes and some really good stuff. Can Paul just jump right into that?
Sure.
Sounds okay. Not a problem.
Yeah, go.
So, yeah, on the initial version of Home Server, V1, you know, backups, let's say I had about 3 terabytes of videos from back in 2009, was it, 2008, and backing them up daily. It took overnight to do about six PCs every night and 3 terabytes of data on one monstrous PC for video editing. Okay? So that's about how long it took, about 5 to 6 hours for daily backups. You move to Home Server 2011, it now took 15 hours to finish, and I gradually grew to like 8 or 9 machines. But it was a problem. Right now I'm on 2011, 2008 R2 Essentials, that weird long name that allows me to back up more than 10 machines.
Oh, yeah,
storage. That's it. And that's taking me, you know, 15 hours. It's not always finishing. And the CPU and disk are just sitting there doing nothing during backups. Some bottleneck. It's almost like it's throttled. I've even opened trouble tickets and blogged about this. Jump forward to today, and the happy news is, even on this release preview, beta, so Windows Server 2012 Beta Essentials, the thing is flying. First backup of a laptop, 10 minutes over Wi-Fi. Second backup, 1 minute, whether it's solid state or even a spinning drive, because no data changed since the day before. It's nice. The CPU and the disk are finally getting used, and so is the gigabit. So hallelujah, the bottleneck is removed. I don't know what they did, but it is going so much faster.
Paul, jump back to your camera there.
And those backups that you're doing, are you not putting it in the storage space, right? It's just on a regular...
Yeah, let me talk about that. So the video I just uploaded to my site, tinkertree.com/Windows Server 2012 Beta Faster, that article. It's right there in the live stream for folks there. I've got a multiple drives. I've got a single 1 terabyte 7200 RPM drive with a virtual machine running. That only took 2 minutes and 2.5 minutes to back up. Or I've got one on a RAID of 2 solid-state drives, SATA 3, the latest, you know, screamers. And that takes 2 minutes to back, or excuse me, 30 seconds to 1 minute to back up. So the backups are incredibly fast. I take a physical laptop with a run-of-the-mill 2-year-old Kingston SATA drive, about 18 gig of data, it does a daily backup in under a minute. No machine in my house, even with solid state, took less than 20 minutes on Windows Home Server 2011. So I think you can tell I'm kind of excited.
Yeah.
Speed is just blowing the doors off of anything I've seen for the last 4 years.
Is that the first backup, or the just after it's done a backup the first time, then they're fast after that, or
is yeah, that... good question. Sorry, I got my video back on.
No, good.
Now you can see I'm excited. So the first backup and the second backups, yeah, the first one is taking 10 minutes or so for 16 gig of data. I had one machine that had, I think, 40, 50 gig. Even it only took 15 minutes. Now, a machine with 3 terabytes, that's still going to be maybe an overnight run. But as long as the daily backups, the differential backups, are still 5, 10 minutes compared to the current 1 or 2 hours every night some of my machines are waking up just to do backups, it's just, you know, crazy progress and a whole lot less watts burned, as machines right now are just sitting there idling all night waiting for their turn to do backups and not finishing every night. So, yeah, the news is good for first backup and subsequent backups. Restore is also great news.
That's a charm, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, Windows Home Server.
Windows Home Server, or whatever it's called, Windows Server Edition, Essentials.
So, John Zeller, was it you about a year ago starting to have the feeling Windows Home Server 2011 was going to be the Vista of the server product family, right?
Yeah.
The one you want to skip? Speed was never that impressive.
I mean, I look at version 1, right? It came out in 2007, and then the second version came out in 2011. So, you know, you had your three-year gap there. Like, you know, Microsoft, right? That's about how they go 3 years. But then the Colorado guys came out. And what was it? It's about a year and a half. Now we got this guy. So we didn't sit on that Colorado product for very long. And now it's a bit like, it's almost like, I don't know if you want to say avoid it, because I really like it. I'm also a visual kind of guy. You know, I don't like the way this thing got metro-sized. You know, I don't like it. The dashboard, there's no more icons. There's no more, like, 3D stuff. It's just big words. I mean, like, look at the dashboard right there, the console. It's boring, you know? So I'm not too crazy.
It's a server.
Yeah, but that's it. It's a server, you know? But I want a little bit of eye. I still want a little bit of eye candy there. But,
Well, okay. Do you want to, Paul, anything else on that? I mean, so backups are, once it's backed up, they're for at least in your experience, they've just been lightning fast.
Correct. And having 12 machines I back up regularly, 4 of them over VPN at night, you know, remotely, not in my house, being able to do bare metal restores quickly at last is also a good thing. They're now taking 10, 15 minutes. They used to take 3, 4, 5 hours, half of Saturday, to restore a broken laptop's hard drive. So, yeah, I'm pleased with backups and restores. The performance just being so much better than 2011 ever was.
So that they were talking about the deduplication. You know, like that's it. If you have, a couple ISOs and a few folders, it'll actually just, you know, have, let's say, your original, and then it'll put, like, what do you call it, shadow links or, like, virtual links or what do you call it, tombstones, you know, to the other ones. So what happens is it won't back up the same image, you know, like the same file. I don't know if that's part of Windows 8 and also part of the server. You know, did you hear any news about that?
Yeah, it still lives on. So I can look at my overall backup set of all the machines I backed up, and I do the math, and it's still using far less space in that PC clients folder. Let me take a look at it.
That
lives on. SIS, single instance storage, lives on, where, you know, it looks at clusters that have changed since yesterday, backs up only those. If you have 5 instances of Windows 7 64-bit on your LAN, they're only using up, you know, 1.2x the size rather than 5x the size, like a bunch of ghost images we've used of every hard drive. So the dedupe's still alive, which I was also relieved to see.
Cool.
So that you're getting the speed and the dedupe. And my understanding is when I'm looking at the backups and restores, which I recorded in that video that I just uploaded, you'll see it's mostly the CPU and disk busy at the beginning end. The Ethernet's doing almost nothing throughout the whole run when there's been no changes in your backup since the day before. There's not much to do over the network, right? So that beginning where it's calculating everything that changed since the day before, the server's busy. It's looking through its database, looking at what changed since the day before, and now it's, you know, offering out those, telling it what to back up. So the Ethernet's used very little. That's why my VPN backups don't take much longer when they're out of my house than when they're in my house. They're just barely using the Internet to my connected family's computers. And that's been true for 3 years. I did server backups over VPN even on the 2011, and even on version 1 I had that working. So,
Cool.
Sorry,
and I think the other thing is what's I don't know if we covered that on the last couple of podcasts is with this version. Remember, like in the Colorado product, you had a 2 terabyte. Like if you wanted to back up your shares, you have that 2 terabyte cap basically. Hmm. And now I think it's is it 16, Chris? Is it 16 terabytes the limit, or it's just like something exponential that you don't know anymore? It's like so high that you don't care.
I'm not sure, but it's the backup was based on the virtual hard drive format. So yeah, whatever limit that is at now with 2012, then that's what the limit will be.
Yeah, and so it's, I think
64.
It's a non-issue.
So yeah, 64 terabytes. Here's the TechNet article about it. So yeah, VHD limitation removed, and there you go. Haven't tested that yet, but yeah, the assumption is I can go past 2 terabytes and mount or restore files from that larger than 2 terabyte volume, which is the stuff you couldn't boot off of also. UEFI, the booting off a 3 terabyte drive, bare metal restore backup, haven't tested that. No idea if that works yet.
The other thing is if you added 3 terabyte drives, let's say, not as your system drive, but if you started to add 3 terabyte drives as your, let's say, pool drives, if they were full, then it would be an issue. That's it, because you've got more than 2 terabytes on the drive. You try to do a backup of that shared folder, then it would fail. So now it's not such a
limitation.
Yeah, no, I've had a 3 terabyte array for 3 years, and that thing actually backed up with version 1 and version 2, but it wasn't the boot drive. That's the thing that made it easier. So yeah, it's confusing. But anyhow, the limitation should just go away in 2012, period, whether it's boot drive or not.
All right.
That's cool.
I think we need to dig into that a little bit more at some point in time when we get a chance. But I did want to show a little bit about storage spaces, because that has been a lot talked about. But we saw that in the Windows Server 8 when that came out in its Release Canada or whatever that was, beta form, whatever, the pre-version of this. And then it makes its debut for real, I think, right here. I messed with it the other day. I exposed 5 250 gig drives virtually to this box, and it's not all that difficult. If you I'm in the dashboard right now, and I found it. You can do this through the control panel and some other things, but it's just as easy to do inside the dashboard when you're in here. You can see I already have a storage space that exists. Those are 2 of those drives mirrored, and then I have 3 more drives available to me. Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, thank you. Sorry about that. I had that up a second ago, and then I was wondering why you guys were all staring at me. Crazy. Okay, 1 second here. Like, what are you talking about, Collison? Okay, there we go. Now, you can see I'm in the dashboard now, and for folks who haven't seen the dashboard, that is it in all its glory. Not the most exciting thing I've ever seen, but that's okay. Absolutely no eye candy. We'll pop into storage, and you can see here that I have the C drive, which is just a 100 gig drive that I exposed out to it. And then there's watch your screens for the Google. Are you still there? By the way, so watch for that so you don't disconnect. C drive 100 gig, and then I exposed 5 250 gig drives to it. I've already put them together. I've already put 2 of them together in mirror in the Z drive, and then I wanted to show you guys what that looks like. You click on Advanced Manage Storage Spaces, and it brings up, again, this hasn't changed from Windows Server 8 at all, so if you messed around with it there, it's pretty much very similar to that. You have to click on the button to change the settings. It won't let you do it right off the bat so you don't screw things up. And then if I wanted to create a pool, I just come over here and say, okay, I want to do that, and I'm going to select these 3 drives. We'll put them in a little bit of a pseudo RAID and create the pool. And then it's just going to prepare those for me. Take a second to do that. And then here at this point, I get to choose what I want to name that. So I'm going to put, we'll be really super creative, and I'll call it Storage Space 2. And I'm going to assign it the drive letter Y. And in this is the case where I think we're all interested in what this looks like, is the various options. So there's simple, no resiliency. So I'm assuming that's just striped. Is that what you call it, right? So there's no, if they fail, you're going to lose data. Yep. Two-way mirror. So the data is always copied on another drive. A three-way mirror. And you know what? The three-way mirror only shows up if you have three drives selected. So that's kind of nice, because I did this the other day and that didn't show because I only had two drives. And then parity. So anybody want me to choose one?
Choose wisely.
Choose wisely. All right, we'll do a three-way mirror because three ways are always good. And then and then we'll set that there and create the storage space. And away it goes. It's actually pretty fast. I found it doesn't take a ton of time to get this part done. It's doing its thing. I'll show you how we're going to delete one too. Any comments to this point?
I just followed you doing the exact same thing. It was pretty fast.
I did hear some talk. I'll have to find a post where it is. I'm not sure if it was a tweet or an article I read. Somebody was talking about these storage spaces where, you know, at least the guy, and I like when these guys make reference to version 1. The guy says, you know, at least in version 1, I was able to take a drive out of the pool. He says, here, it's like he said, he created a pool with, let's say, four drives, and, you know, he put all his content there, and then he decided, okay, you know what, I want to remove a drive from that pool. Like, you can't. So I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, it works like a SAN.
Yeah, from that standpoint, my understanding is that once you create these, you'd have to break them to take it out, and so move the data over to another partition, break them. So in this case, I have the two-way mirror. I created this one in advance, this two-way mirror, and you could go in there and change that. It does give you some options here. If I wanted to change the drive letter, I could view the files or show the map.
That's pretty
space.
Cool.
But it doesn't allow me to change the parity in it, right? So it's not like I can go in here and say, now make this, you know, something else.
You'd have to create another pool, right? And then move that stuff there and then delete
the pool. So in this, I haven't messed with this very much. There is an add drive. I can add drives. Maybe not to this. Yeah. I wanted to. Let me break this one up here. So I'm going to delete this and go in there and just delete the storage space. Oh, you know, I can't do that because I actually have drives assigned to it. So let's go back over here. I can show you the move folder works exactly like it did in 2011. And so you'll come here, and at this point, I'm going to move those on to the new drive that I just created. And hit close. It'll take me a second to move those over because I'll have to take them all off to get that done.
You know, did you notice the warning for those shared when it's on your boot drive to get them off of there? They want you to move it. So there's the signaling initially to get it, put it to another drive. So that's pretty nice.
Yeah, I got that. I think 160 gig drive, and that, like you said, all the shares are on the C drive, and then in the console, you get the warning up the corner.
It's a good thing, otherwise you'd forget, you know? I mean, initially when you're doing your setup, it's a nice touch.
This will take a second, and actually I remember when I did this and I moved them onto the Z drive to begin with, when you move the backup folders, I had one or two backups. Paul, that wasn't very fast. when I came to the client computer backups and I said move this folder, and move that over. Now, granted, I've maybe backed it up one or two times. So in this case, though, it's showing. Here we'll move it to the Y drive. We'll move it, and this one will not move as fast. It's going to take its time in moving that data over. So
Have you tried benchmarking any of these to see what the actual transfer rate speeds are?
No, of course not.
Because Fauché did that, and he recorded some really poor speeds using storage spaces.
That could be odd, though, Mike, because think about it. I mean, an example in my case, all my VMs and the drives that I would use in this situation, they're on a small RAID, but it's a RAID 5 nonetheless, and, you know, that, and they're spindles. So that'll pick up the speed, but, you know, let's say I put it over on my RAID 10, I mean, that thing with Cascade is hitting insane numbers. So, I mean, let's say I had them in there. Don't know what the real purpose of that would be, but I mean, then I, you know, then I would be showing you test numbers that would be insane, I would imagine.
Jim, what I did for a little informal benchmarking was I had a RAID 5, not on my LSI RAID controller array, by the way, just on a cheap external MediaSonic enclosure, a RAID 5 with a single SATA connection. It does like 150 megabytes, you know, at ATTO bench or something. That's my server. My first backup of one virtual machine was on a 1 terabyte drive that benchmarked at 60 megabytes per second. The next benchmark I ran was over 600 megabytes per second in the RAID 0 of 2 SSDs. So 10 times the speed. One backup took 2 minutes on the 1 terabyte drive spinning at 7,200 RPMs. The other backup took 2.5 minutes on the 10 times as fast client. So the client speed doesn't matter much, is what I'm saying. Even an old crappy laptop or whatever, the daily backups, you're not going to notice a big difference. And even the first backup wasn't a big deal. I kind of agree. We're looking probably at storage spaces, like Mike Fauché would be suspecting that is slowing.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Yeah. And what are you physically on, Jim? What the, these bits are being copied on a hard drive? What is that? Where is that?
Yeah.
Virtual box
so
live?
It's a Core i3, and it's going to a it's a spinner, and it's going to the OS is on a solid state drive, and the the data drive is a, let me think about this for a second. I think it's a 2 terabyte Western Digital drive.
Okay. So if you benchmarked it, you probably would get, you know, 80 megabytes a second or something if you ran ATTO disk bench without doing any other activity. And then if we do the math, it's going to take a while to copy that much data on a single spindle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would agree. We're probably not going to see lightning speeds out of storage spaces until they get it stable. Or stabler, if that's a word, just because I think they'd rather choose speed over correctness. Right?
And you presented multiple drives to your virtual machine to do the storage spaces test, right?
Yeah, I created 5 virtual drives.
Yeah.
And I just broke up that, if you saw there, I just broke up that storage space, the one I created of the 3 drives. It did not have anything in it, which is kind of nice that it won't let you break them up until you don't have any data on it anymore. And then you can go in and break them apart and then put them back together in a different configuration if you'd like. I'd need to move all that to break up the Z drive. I'd need to move that those client backups, and that would take probably about 20 minutes. So I would I don't want to do that live, but you can see there I broke those up. So. Not a bad way. I was thinking, so back to the question of, hey, I couldn't just pull a drive out of the pool. So, John, maybe in this case, because that was you who said that, right, John?
Yeah.
So maybe in this case, I move all my data over to the, so I, maybe I create this Z partition, so to speak, of a couple drives. I migrate the data onto that. I would come into this drive pool and break it up, then take... And remove the drive, put it back in, and then reestablish that, reestablish that pool, and then move the data back over. So, maybe a little bit different than in days of past when it just all worked, but at least at this point, that seems how it's done.
Gotcha. So, Jim, okay. You said that's on an i3, right? You don't have that on your microserver?
No. I was setting that up today, or I was going to do that earlier today and put it on the microserver, but I just didn't get all the way to it.
Okay. Yeah, I was playing around on the microserver, so I had a couple of tips there for the people who, when you try and get it on the microserver, what was the story? One of the issues I had was when you installed, what did I have to do? You had to put it in IDE mode. Then I had to do the installation. Then I had to go online to AMD and get the drivers. I can give you a link and to the drivers. Go get the Windows 7 drivers, install that to get the... Because what happens is it defaults on the microserver. It's going to default to 1280 by 1024, the screen. So because it's actually a H... is it H? It's a H4200, I think the graphics card in there, NVIDIA, or ATI, card. So anyway, you have to get the drivers. And then once you get the drivers and you install all of that, then you can actually reboot the server into AHCI mode. So you go into registry, you change it to AHCI mode. Because I think if you want to add 3 terabyte drives, you have to be in the AHCI mode. Is that right? Can anybody confirm that one? No?
I do not know.
So anyway, so I updated the drivers and stuff like that. So there's a couple little hoops you kind of got to jump through there. Maybe I'll talk about it again some other time there. But yeah, the microserver needed a little bit of a push.
A little bit of work. We should get that posted in the microserver forums. Just kidding. It's with as many of us as own those things. We're single-handedly keeping HP afloat. Well, guys, any more thoughts on storage pool? I'd want to talk about media, but I think we're a little bit over time on that, and I don't want to make this a marathon podcast. So maybe we'll save that for the next round of discussion. There's really not much to that. When you set up the server, we talked about this last week with Christian and John when we were doing a first look. When you set up the folders the very first time, you don't get those media folders like music and documents and recorded TV and some of those until you enable media services on the server, and then those appear. So if you're out there and you're installing it for the first time and you're like, hey, wait a minute, where are those folders? They will they'll come up once you go into the dashboard, and there's an option there that says set up media server. Very bottom. As soon as you do that, it creates those folders for you. And I haven't messed with any of the DLNA stuff or any of the media services. I haven't even connected it to a Media Center PC to see if it'll record TV. I think there's some things we'll have to talk about when we get there. Yeah. Anything else? Domain? We'll cut it off here with domain and with storage spaces. Any final thoughts on any of those things?
$425.
Yeah. $350 for TechNet.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think we were talking about this pre-show. I don't know. I'll just leave it at that. Who knows if it'll be $425. Paul, you bringing something else to up the show on the way out? You have your screen up, Paul. He's probably
sorry about that. Yes.
My little pet project is still going to be that connecting the domain and the SSL, my own personal, not the Microsoft version one. That's my little pet till I get that right. I want remote anywhere working for me.
Okay.
We didn't really go into depth on it.
You know what? Because what's nice is that's it. Everybody's starting to get on this, you know? So it's, yeah. If you look around MSWHS, they got a couple of posts. I think the guy over at.
We got served.
Mike has a few.
I tried that one that where we got served, but it didn't work for me. I was able to get to the point where it went over to my domain provider and, was, I guess, looking for the SSL cert, but that really didn't make sense because you should have the SRT already installed, I guess. There's something missing there that I didn't catch, but because you got to be able to access it with your own private URL on the outside. But
yeah, because I read somewhere where somebody did something like they had an option to either put like you said your own or to use or to make one. Because I think it's or like you said in the beginning of the program, you got one for really cheap. Because isn't an SSL certificate like usually costs like $100 to get?
Yeah, GoDaddy's got them for $70, but you can jump online and get them for $12.95 right now with a discount code. So.
Well, the single domain SSL certs are usually cheap. It's the wild card ones that are really expensive.
Yeah, the $200.
Yeah.
So,
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, no, that's why I was talking about certificates a little bit earlier, because the simplicity of getting remote users in over the VPN, it seems like that'd be pretty appealing. If you're spending $425, you might blow past that 10 PC daily backup, and you might do the first backup in your house, and then friends and family, move off to a different location and for daily backups after that, like your kid moves off to college, for instance. So just to see this complexity of configuring VPN, and I'm sharing my desktop now to show you the Microsoft article, it's, come on, I don't know. It's a large part of your Saturday afternoon, and you hope it works, right? The old version was really simple for that stuff. Setting up your remote access was simple, and setting up VPN could be pretty simple too. So,
Just yeah, a little. They need to simplify it.
Yeah.
Because I saw something when I was setting up the server, Windows Server Essentials 2012. Like that, it said I'm going to set up the remote web access, and I'm going to set up a VPN connection for you. And next, you know, like a couple of clicks and bang, it was done. And then next, you know, on my network map, I have something that says VPN to the server. Like stuff started to come up, and it was only a couple of clicks.
Once we get into all that, all those settings, there, you've just taken the average guy at home, you know, for the family out of the equation.
Yeah,
I don't think the average family guy is. I don't think the average family guy is trying to set up a VPN.
Well, Well, you could. Next. It really is pretty easy.
So we're not guys. Let's not. I get this at work all the time when I talk to people, and they know I have this average guy site, and they snicker at me because we're not the average guys, right? I mean, we're not, and we're in here talking about this. I think we often say, you know, we're gonna with 2012. It's still not average guy, and it's aimed right at the enthusiast, and so I think it's allowed to have some complexity just because we know right now that the server concept at home, it's not necessarily working. It's not, people don't feel that need to go out and buy it, otherwise they would have went out and bought them, you know, and they're not. So I think this is still an enthusiast play for most of us, and we should treat it as such. So it's going to be difficult to more difficult from a difficulty level. It's never going to be easy. I shouldn't say never, but I just don't think we're going to see that kind of functionality coming to the average guy. So while this is the Average Guy podcast, we're all above average when it comes to technology. And you guys are just super nice guys anyway. So thanks for coming out. I'll use that as a nice segue. Thanks for coming out this evening and taking an hour and a half of your time. I think we covered some two really good topics and if you just joined us late, we talked about everything around the domain and so some good conversation, about 50 minutes of discussion around what the domain means in Server 2012, and then spent some time on storage spaces as well as backup. Chris, otherwise known as Drashna, thanks for joining us. It's great to meet you. First time I've really got to spend some time with you. Thanks for coming out and joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Greg, it's always good to have you come in here and add your two cents as well. John, of course, I'm not complete without you, so I appreciate you coming out and doing that. Mike, glad BYOB didn't do their podcast tonight, otherwise we would have ran right over the top of this, but thanks for jumping in and doing it as well.
Hey, anytime.
And Paul out at tinkertree.com, you are a blogging machine at the moment, and and if folks want to know what's going on in that environment, they can head out to Tinkertree, right? Did I get that right? Tinkertree.com?
Yes, D-R-Y at the end. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And get that information that he is posting. We'll cut it off here for the podcast, at least for the audio podcast. If you want to contact me or the show, you can send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Got a couple emails this week, and I always appreciate your feedback and your comments. And we'll do the regular Home Tech podcast Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, right here at theaverageguy.tv. And guys, thanks again for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. So much fun.
Have a good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.